Starting Tech News Weekly in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Tech News Weekly. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by John Bubb, as I meet you every week. How are you doing, John?
Hey, Andrew, what's up?
Nothing much. I feel a little tired. My allergies are starting to kick in. Spring is in the air here in New York.
Baby, you're so old.
Spring is in the air.
You have all these issues. Wah, wah, wah.
I do. I have a lot of issues.
Maybe you should move down south, because a lot of people that have allergies and stuff say that sometimes where they have allergies, like during winter, if they move down south where it's warmer, it's so much better.
Yeah, I've heard that. Like, you could hear I'm a little hoarse today.
Yeah.
And John was saying, like, oh, your audio sounds weird. I don't think it's my audio. I think it's just my voice right now. I'm having a lot of trouble with my, like, throat, and I'm congested. So
you get in a big screaming match with your wife?
I did. I was yelling at her, and then I realized it wasn't her. It was a lampshade, and I was drunk.
Jeez.
That's what happened. But
your story.
Yeah. We have a lot to talk about. Actually, we don't have a lot to talk about, but we have some cool stories here to talk about. Talking about technology, before we go into the news, I want to talk about what happened this week to my MacBook. I went into panic mode on Tuesday morning. So I've been having this problem with the MacBook where I'm getting these I/O errors, I/O disk errors, for a while. And John, do you remember when I told you about it? Like, it's been months that this has been happening.
Oh, totally. This has been at least 4 or 5 months that you've been having these errors.
Awful. And I decided that it's the SSD that's starting to go, and I was prepared to just call it quits when the drive goes. I'm done. I'll get a new one. In the meantime, I created a cloned image on another hard drive just in case that it goes bad. I could just swap it in and I'll be fine until the following day when I order the hard drive. Because SSDs, yeah, there's new ones coming out all the time. The speed rating is changing all the time. So I wanted to wait till something new comes out. So the hard drive finally goes. Everything crashes. I open it up. I put a new hard drive in and not detecting the disk. Huh.
Uh-oh.
Maybe I put the wrong one in. Open it up, put a new hard drive in, not detecting
disk. Check the jumper settings.
Just the jumper set. Yeah. Oh, my God. Those nightmares. Setting it as a slave, a primary, master. Awful. I'm so glad we don't do that anymore. I'm so glad. So I'm like, wow, this sucks. So I put the old hard drive in. It sees it, surprisingly. I go into disk utility. I try to do like a repair. Everything starts, like, it cannot do anything. It just starts giving me all these weird errors. I'm like, okay, there's something wrong with the disk. So I take it out again. I tried to partition. Doesn't happen again. Nothing. I put in the new hard drive in, the old hard drive in. Again, dead. Now I start panicking. Is the logic board bad on this thing? If it is, you know how much money it's going to cost me to repair a MacBook Pro? It's probably going to cost me like $600 to go to the store, to go to Apple to fix it.
It's going to cost you too damn much.
Oh, my God. Like, now I'm like panicking. I go, oh, I did not want to buy a laptop. I didn't want to buy another MacBook. By the way, this is approaching 3 years. Still works great for me. I don't need to spend another $2,000 to get a MacBook Pro. I mean, that's insane. And top it all off, like last time, I'm not going to be able to use the other MacBook as a secondary device because this one's dead. So I'm really getting angry at this point. I did everything that I could. I kind of figured out that maybe it's not the logic board, because Spencer had the same exact problem on the same model, and they replaced the logic board and nothing happened. It did not fix. So they changed the hard drive and it worked. And I started thinking, I wonder if it's not the logic board, it's not the hard drive, but it's the hard drive cable. Now, the cable, it's a SATA cable, but it's like this modified SATA cable because it's Apple. They're not going to make it simple enough to just plug a SATA cable in there. So it's like this weird cable. It's like $50.
Right.
So before I ordered that cable, I decided that I was going to try to swap it where the DVD drive is. And I remember that 3 years ago, I bought this adapter. It's you know, like this blue case. It's a casing for a hard drive where you connect the hard drive to it, and then that connects to the custom ribbon cable that they use for the DVD drive. Connect it up. Guess what? It works.
Wow. Really?
So I removed the DVD drive. Now I have my hard drive in there. That thing, it's working so well. And I realized that the last couple of months, this computer's been running like crap. And even when I got it, I used to record the show in GarageBand. And I would get these disk speed errors all the time. So I'm thinking, from day one, I have probably had a problem with that cable. From getting this
returned it.
I could have returned it. I just didn't know. I mean, obviously, I thought, okay, well, it's a disk error. Like, it's not fast enough to write. But why wouldn't it be fast enough to write on the MacBook Pro when you're using Apple software? So, long story short, I'm using the bay for the DVD drive for my hard drive. I ordered that cable. It's like $50. I found it on eBay for like $19. I ordered it just to see if it'll work. Maybe the controller burnt out on the logic board, but who cares? It's working. So that was my tech disaster of a story. But you know, the moral of this story is, before you go out and decide that it's burnt or you go to Apple, try to think outside of the box and try to figure out, you know, what you can do to possibly fix it. I don't think most people would have thought about replacing the DVD drive and putting the hard drive there.
Most people just take it to a store.
Most people take it to Apple and, you know, they charge you like $700 because they want to repair the logic board. Ron Knight says you probably don't use... I've not used a DVD drive in this thing for years. Probably 3 years now. So if that, I mean, I don't know if I ever used it. And it was an SSD. So now if the other one works, once I get the cable, I'll pop in another SSD in here and have, you know, 500 gigs, if anything. So that was my story, John. That's what I did this week. Any tech mishaps for you?
I bet that scared the crap out of you, because I know that when I've had issues with my computer where it doesn't even boot, I'm just like, oh, crap.
But you know,
it scares me.
It didn't scare me in the sense that, oh, my God, I lost all this data, because I have been very progressive in terms of moving everything to the cloud. None of my photos are on my computer. None of my music is on my computer. None of my documents are on the computer. Everything is somewhere in the cloud, or you have it. You know, some stuff that's not on the cloud, I know for a fact that you have that stuff. Like, with work.
I play things pretty fast and loose, where I don't necessarily have a backup of all my stuff.
Do you not back up to the cloud?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
I just have so much stuff that I would have to back up that it's going to cost money, and money that I don't have to do that stuff.
Like all
and
our video.
To be honest, the most of the time, I don't have a hard drive go bad. I mean, I don't think I've ever had a hard drive go bad, knock on wood. So I don't necessarily feel the need to do that.
I had...
You know what I'm saying?
I had a hard drive go bad, and it was one of the worst disasters that's ever happened to me. I had just bought a brand new computer. It was like a custom-built computer from one of these companies. I can't remember. It was probably... It happened 2006, 2007. So, and it was a RAID. I had a RAID 0. And the controller, something happened with the RAID controller, and it screwed up my RAID, and I couldn't get back anything. Like, I lost everything that I had.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and you're talking stuff that I had from, like, the 90s, you know? And it's years and years of stuff that's compiled. All my Outlook email, I lost that. All my photos, all my music, all my videos. Just everything that I had was gone. Because I didn't back up. And that's the moment that I decided I'm not going to use Outlook ever again. I'm not storing my email. I'm not gonna hoard MP3s like a maniac. And I started looking into cloud. You know, Gmail for me was the first cloud service that I started using. And with Gmail, you could do a lot. Google Docs has been incredible because I'm able to store everything, all my documents on there. And then Dropbox. So those are my three go-tos, really. But I have nothing on this computer. The hard drive is empty. I have a... Let's see. The hard drive is a 256 gig hard drive. I have almost 200 gigs free. I really keep nothing on it because of stuff like this. But the panic is that, you know, MacBooks are not cheap. And I don't want to go and spend $2,000 for something that I don't need right now. I mean, when the time comes, obviously this is going to get old. I'm going to need to upgrade. That is the time that I do it, when you need to upgrade. It's a total waste when you do it. The last time I did this, I was so angry that I had to go buy a laptop. Because it was unnecessary.
For you.
It was unnecessary.
Yeah.
And no difference. I mean, you know, so... That was my story.
I find it weird that people still use email clients. Swamp Rat in the room says that he uses an email client. My mom uses an email client. I'm like, that's so weird.
I'll tell you why. I actually like Outlook a lot. Like, if I had a choice where my email client, you know, and I still could do it. I could still use my email, an email client for Gmail, and it's still on the cloud. I could do that. But I've gotten so paranoid with losing anything, where I don't use any clients anymore, and I kind of fell out of it. But I think Outlook is beautiful. I think it's a great client. I think if you're in the business world, it goes a long way. If you need offline access to the email, obviously it's there. So there's a lot of pros to having an email client. I've gotten so disconnected from it, and I was so disgusted by what happened. I totally eliminated it because I don't want to ever fall back to it.
Yeah.
And all my emails in Gmail. I mean, I literally sync everything up to Gmail, and I use Gmail. But Outlook is great. Even Word, though. You know, my wife, and we'll get into the tech news, but I'd like to add a little personality to the show. That's something new that we're doing now, where we talk about technology.
So you want more of your personality in the show?
Yes, yes. And I took my happy pill, so I'm in a good mood today.
Oh, thank God.
I took a whole bunch like this.
True story.
It really happens all the time. That's what happens. I grab my happy pills and I just put a bunch in my mouth, and Jessica sends me off to do stuff. That's what she does. I wake up, she gives me my coffee, she says, open your mouth, and she just pours a bunch of pills and then just shoves me out the door. That's the only way. That's the only way she could tolerate me. But, you know, we've kind of changed the way that we do stuff. I mean... Years ago, nobody was doing cloud backups. And the thing was, I don't trust where I'm setting my data. I don't trust where I'm putting it. And
I still don't either.
I know. And you have that mentality. I, at this point, I'm putting it all in the cloud. You know what? I don't have anything that's that important. If it's that important, I'm obviously not going to put it on the cloud. I have a document with a lot of, you know, my brother's information and banking information, just in case something were to happen to me. You know, all my banking account info, my savings, my business stuff. I'm trying to think. My license. I have a copy of my license, copy of my Social Security. I have that. And if anything were to happen, Jessica could obviously access everything and get money and do whatever, because I handle a lot of the finance stuff. Even for you, I mean, you have like an emergency folder for me just in case. I mean, those are stuff that I don't put on the cloud, but I provide.
Right.
You know, and I wouldn't put that on the cloud at all. But it's fascinating. I mean, I think even with
the NSA could get to it.
Yeah, and God forbid they get my savings and my investment accounts. You know. But also I wanna make a little statement before we go into the news. I was a total idiot on What the Tech. I was talking about how great Windows 8.1 is, and 15 minutes into my rant about how quick my phone is now, I realized I didn't have Windows 8.1. Windows Phone 8.1. I had Windows Phone 8, and I had just done like a service pack update to the phone. I felt like an idiot because I'm talking about how great this thing is, and I'm supposed to be like this tech pundit. And
I bet you weren't the only one, though.
Apparently I wasn't, because I honestly thought I would get like a bunch of emails saying like, Andrew, you're so stupid. Like, how could you do a tech show? I was so surprised. I got so many emails from people saying that was actually one of the funniest things I've ever seen, that you owned up to, and you're like, I'm an idiot. And the other people said, you know what, Andrew? I just realized that I didn't have 8.1 after you said that. So people actually thought that they had 8.1. So apparently I'm not the only one. Because you go to do an update and it says, like, would you like to upgrade to the latest version? And it's not. So... I just wanted to bring that up.
What does that say about Microsoft and the expectations for what they're putting out?
By the way, it's not really I don't know if it's officially released yet, but you have to go through like this preview developer thing to get it. So when I was doing that, I actually thought I updated, because it was a specific update. It's, you know, it's not like, hey, you got the new update. It's them telling you, hey, this is the preview app. Download the preview app, then you could download it. I'm keeping it real, folks.
That's kind of convoluted.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know, somebody just messaged me on Facebook, someone that I know, and they said, do you guys recommend backing stuff up on a thumb drive or a SD card, and that being like your like super backup, like important stuff goes there, and everybody know, you know, that that's where you keep it just in case, rather than a hard drive on a computer that could possibly break?
Yeah.
I recommend that, but what's the lifespan on these SD cards, John? Like, I have a 32 gig card that has a lot of that stuff on there. And
an SD card or a thumb drive?
Like an SD card.
I would assume that it's got a pretty good lifespan because it's technically not any moving parts.
So here, this is the card, actually, that I use. And I have all my important documents. I have, you know, just copies of everything, my passport, everything.
I have one of those from probably almost 10 years ago that still works just fine.
Yeah, like the only thing I'm worried about is if you put it, you know, if you use it a lot, these pins, they get scratches on the back. The connector.
Yeah, if you're inserting it and taking it out a lot, then yeah. But those things, that and USB drives, are very durable.
Yeah. I'm just curious. I mean,
it's not like an optical hard drive where you have actual moving mechanical parts.
Yeah, no, I just don't know because, you know, they're so inexpensive. I'm curious if you're constantly using it, what the lifespan would be and if that would be a good place to store it. Listen, regardless of whatever you're doing, the only thing that's really safe is taking a hard drive, taking an SSD drive or taking one of these, back it up, and then you have like two or three of them.
Printing everything.
Print everything or get tape, you know, get like backup tapes. To have like a reel-to-reel system
my
in your house.
My mom's done that. She has like a passwords document, and it's like 50 pages long.
Yeah.
She printed the whole thing. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Hey, since we're talking about passwords, John, why don't we go into the story here? Why don't we talk about Heartbleed? And we spoke about it last week, and we went through the list of all these services that are affected by this, which is astonishing. And I got an email asking me, should I... Actually, you know who asked me? Josh Coleman. Josh Combs, he messaged me and he goes, hey, do you think I should change my passwords to all my services? I told him not to because I did some reading and I think you brought it up last week that changing the password may compromise your password.
Yeah.
So... Where are we with this now? Do we change our passwords or do we still leave it the way it is?
It's on a case-by-case basis depending on the service that you're using and depending on whether or not they've actually applied a patch that works. There's the Content Distribution Network, ECMA. They applied a patch that they said fixed it, but apparently it only fixed 3 out of the 6 areas that were vulnerable, and so even though they fixed it, it was still vulnerable for the 3 of the 6 vulnerabilities that you could exploit. So it really depends on the service that you're using and whether or not they've actually applied a fix that works.
Yeah.
So, if they've done that, then it is safe to change your password.
Have you changed any of yours, or you've left it the way it is?
I've left it the way it is. Yeah. It's just one of those things where you're almost damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Something happens. It's to the point where now you have to be freaking paranoid now about your security, and it's almost overwhelming to have to care about this stuff.
Brian in the chat room.
There's been a lot of new push now for password managers, and I think that's a bright idea, but it's still one
like
of those
LastPass.
Even that can get even that can get exploited
so,
eventually.
You know my problem with that is with LastPass. I tend to forget passwords if I don't use it. And, you know, I have like 5 passwords. And they're complicated. They're not simple passwords that we use. But I feel like if I don't practice using those passwords, I'm going to forget it. And the time that I forget is when I'm going to need to access something that's going to suck. But Brian brought up something interesting. He said that changing your password is only a Band-Aid for a bad situation. What people should be doing is two-factor authentication. Yes, it's a major pain in the ass to do two-factor authentication, but...
Yeah.
It works. That's the only way to do it.
I do got to say, though, that there are some issues that I've come across with two-factor authentication. And it's something that I think is the problem for businesses, where two-factor authentication is great if it's just you. But if you're in a business where you have to share an account for whatever reason, like we do here at GFQ,
yeah,
we can't use two-factor authentication, because if we set it to, you know, Andrew's phone, well, then he gets the authentication PIN number. I don't. So if I'm logging in, I have to ask him, hey, can you look at your phone and see what the PIN is for me to enter?
Yeah.
So that doesn't really work for us.
I use it in some cases. I use it for my Gmail. I use it. There's a couple other services that I use it for. I can't remember what it was. For my banking, actually, for my business banking, the only way to log in, I have this crazy system with Citibank that every time I log in, I have a little little chip with numbers, and it gives me the login number every time, so people can't, you know, nobody could hack into it or whatever. That's the only way that you could actually access it when you have, if you have that physical thing on in front of you that's linked to your account. But you know, with this Heartbleed, and I think we're going to get more of these in the future. Right now, there's a big story that Android is affected. Millions of Android devices are affected by this and are vulnerable to end user hacks. This is reported by Ars Technica. Android smartphones running version 4.1.1 they're screwed, because they could lose their password, messages, banking info, email. All this stuff is vulnerable. Google acknowledged it this afternoon, but security experts at Lockout Mobile told Ars Technica that they have discovered that some carriers' customized version of version 4.2.2 is also vulnerable. And just want to let you know, most people are running version 4.2.2. A lot
about
of these carriers.
34% of Android phones are running 4.1.x.
And how about 4.2?
I don't have a stat on that, just for the 4.1.
I'll give you an example. My phone, that which came out this year, should be running 4.4. It's running 4.2.2. And that really sucks.
This is the whole problem, too, is that with these large security vulnerabilities like this, and the problem is that Google and generally carriers that are in charge of updating the software for your phone are very, very slow in providing updates. So even if you do have a security issue like this, it's, you have no idea when you might actually get a patch for this.
Yeah. No, you don't
you
know.
You might be able to.
Or you might not.
Your device and, yeah.
You might not get an update patch. I mean, give an example. I mean, these carriers, they are so slow to
update. They take
update.
8 months to do anything. It's ridiculous.
With my phone, I have an LG G2. And I bought it because at the time, everybody said this has the best camera. It's the fastest Android phone on the market. It's so good. Yes, super fast. Everything is great on this phone. I absolutely love the phone. I hate the camera. It's a piece of junk. I've been very vocal about the quality of the imaging, and I think it's a total sham that they're marketing this as a camera phone. The fact that the camera is the selling point of this, that it has this weird stabilizer, so when you move, the sensor actually moves with it, so you don't get...
I'm still in the realm of, if you want a phone with a good camera, go with an iPhone or a Windows phone.
Oh my God, yeah. Go with the Lumias.
Nokia.
Go with the Lumias or go with an iPhone. The Android is atrocious, these cameras. And listen, if you play with it enough and you finesse it enough, you'll get a really good shot. So I don't want to get those emails from people saying, like, look at this picture I took with my phone and look how great it looks. And yeah, you got a good picture. But most people are not going to sit there and set up the ISO to, you know, set up the perfect shot. You don't want to do that. You want to grab the phone. You want to hold it up. You want to click. Okay, I just took a picture. Done. You don't want to sit there and finesse the phone. It's crazy. So this phone is running 4.2.2. Every carrier currently has gotten version 4.4 on this phone, except for, guess who? Verizon. Because they claim that they go through a far more tedious testing, whatever they do with it, they go through far, it's far more tedious than what AT&T is doing. I don't care. I want my phone to be the latest and the greatest. I bought this phone less than a year ago. I bought it in November, and it's running a two-year-old operating system. That's irresponsible, and that's ridiculous.
Absolutely. I think this whole Harpley situation just proves that when you do have major security vulnerabilities like this, you need to be you need to react very quickly to this and actually issue patches. And the problem is that carriers just are not designed to do that.
No, and you know what? They're not. They don't care. First of all, the carrier doesn't want you doing any updates. The carrier wants you to have an old piece of junk by the end of that second year, so you go and you get a new one. That's what the carrier wants. They're not in the business of providing support. They're not in the business of giving you features to extend the use of this phone or to make the phones function better. They want you to have that crappy phone, and then in 2 years, when something comes out that's really good, you go and you buy that. That's their mentality. Apple.
But you do have to provide security updates, I think. I think that is a necessity. I can understand their reasoning for not wanting to provide feature updates, but I think you have to have you must provide the necessity security updates for these devices.
Sure, but here's now, this is where the problem
is. At a minimum.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you're talking about the carrier and how slow they are to update and how long it takes and how tedious it is and how some people get it 3 months later and some people get it now, they cannot deliver this in a quick manner.
Timely
manner. The OEM, the manufacturer, or Google, whoever it is, can do that. They're the ones that could push an update really quickly.
A lot of people are really upset that this, in a way, highlights Apple's closed system being, in a way, superior in that factor.
Of course it is. And listen, I know a lot of people don't like it.
Nothing from Apple was affected by Heartbleed.
No, because they could release a patch tomorrow. Even if they were affected, they could release a patch tomorrow and there's no problem at all. They could push an update. Version 7.1, whatever the hell they want to call it, they could release that patch. You can't do that with an Android phone. It's nearly impossible. Unless you have a Google device. That's the only time that you could actually get it. And you know what? You're still stuck to the carrier, because if they want to push it, you could push it. It's crazy.
Right.
It frustrates me so much, and people think it's, you know, Andrew, you're just making a big deal out of this. No, if there's no reason why one carrier is able to push the latest version and another refuses to, it's crazy. I'm actually, when my contract is done with Verizon, I'm finished with them. I'm not going to do Verizon because of this. And they've always been closed like this, but you know, it's crazy that I can't take my phone, plug it in here, or go here and hit update and download it from the Google server, and it's done.
A lot of that is just inherent to Android, though.
Yeah.
You have such a large external community of people that create ROMs.
Yeah, and you know what? 90% of them don't work properly.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing also, the mentality that, yeah, you know what, Andrew, you can't do it. You don't have the greatest version, but you can go and download a ROM. You could root it, then download a ROM, and then you could get the features that you want or that you're supposed to have. Why would anybody?
That, in a way, is a hassle to do that.
Oh, it's convoluted. It's insane. I understand if you want to tweak. I understand that. I like tweaking. I like overclocking. I like changing things up. But if I want to do it for a security purpose, there's no reason why I should do that.
Right.
If I have 4.1.1 and there's no update. And I'm a little tech savvy, that would be extremely convoluted of a way to do your update to get a security fix.
Oh, most people couldn't do it.
Yeah. And that's my rant.
Let's talk about this Google Glass one-day sale.
Yeah.
This is something that a lot of people were excited about. Google Glass sells out for the first one-day sale. On Tuesday, Google began selling Google Glass to residents for a 24-hour period. Google Glass costs about $1,500 plus tax and comes bundled with either sunshade lenses or prescription lens frames. This is an interesting thing that they did, that they decided to do this for a 24-hour sale. But I have a problem here.
Okay.
The problem I have is all these freaking stupid headlines saying Google Glass sells out in first one-day sale. It's a one-day sale.
Yeah. They sold out what they had for that one day.
Yeah. It's a one-day sale. Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I think it's cool, okay? The concept. I find the concept of Google Glass is really cool. The problem is the execution right now. This is a beta device. It's not complete yet. This is not the last version. This is not a production version. This is Google, and it's unbelievable. They're charging you $1,500 to become a beta tester for a product that's not proven to work. An explorer. That's what they're calling it, and I did air quotes. I don't know why. I don't know why I'm doing this constantly. But, you know, it's an incomplete device, and a lot of people are getting it, and a lot of people are excited, and then they realize, like, okay, well, there's not much you could do with this. Like, I'm just walking around with this thing on my head.
It's like 15 applications.
Yeah, and, you know, they're developing it, and I understand they need a community that's going to do this. It's necessary.
And heaven forbid you wear Google Glass outside in San Francisco, you might get the crap beat out of you.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people do stupid stuff over there with them. You know.
True. I mean, you heard about that guy in San Francisco that went to an anti-Google rally or whatever.
Yeah.
And then as he was leaving the anti-Google rally, he put on his Google glasses and had them stolen.
Yeah. I think the concept, you know, in 2 years, I may change my mind about this device. And I may say, wow, this is actually a great device. Right now, there's zero appeal for me to get it. And I'm a tech enthusiast. I'm an early adopter when it comes to stuff like this.
I agree. But you also have the added hurdle of people concerned about privacy. There's a lot of people saying that, well, we need to ban these from being used while driving. We need to ban these from bars so you don't go into bathrooms and record people. We don't want you to record people. Well, what's the whole point of this then? And then again, how is that really any different from a smartphone?
Yeah.
You can still use a smartphone to covertly record somebody.
Yeah, but it's obvious if you're holding your phone like this, people, there's more of a chance that they're going to realize that they're being recorded.
Sure.
I think what they're going to end up having to do is put a little light on it, like a webcam, in, you know, so people see that it's
on. I thought
it
already has some sort of a little indicating light. I thought so.
I don't see one. Am I wrong?
Yeah, but have you ever seen somebody use it?
I've seen one in public. I don't remember seeing, like, a little indicator.
Were they recording?
They weren't. I don't know if they were recording or not. I just saw it in public. It does not have a light, says Brian Monroe. See, that's a problem if that's the case.
It's just, I think they have the technological hurdle in addition to the privacy hurdle. So
yeah.
they have multiple things here where this is a neat idea in principle, but it's going to be, you know, 5 years from now before we see this really, because it's like smartphones, where smartphones initially were like BlackBerries. You didn't have touch screens and all that stuff, and then eventually we did have touch screens. Because that's what people wanted, and we finally found technology to do that. I think it's going to be a very similar path where it's a neat idea, but until somebody gets it right, gets the technology to do it right, it's not really feasible.
Yeah, I don't know. It's bizarre, actually. It really is that this has become such a huge... And you know what? They're 2 years into this development.
Yeah.
It's 2 years in. So,
you know, speaking of some other stuff in terms of phones and technological stuff, I know you're really excited about Google's Project Aura, which is their revolutionary modular smartphone that they're building.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I think, as someone that likes to play around with stuff like this, I think it's a cool concept that you could actually replace the camera. And this is how I see it, okay? Normally, I probably wouldn't have a big camera on it, but let's say I'm going somewhere, I'm going to an event, I would like to take the camera module out and put a bigger lens on there, and now it's a better camera. I think that's really cool. Do most people want it? Probably not. Do you think most people are going to get it?
No. I'm kind of in the same boat as Google Glass with this, in the sense that I think it's a interesting idea, but I don't think that the execution is well enough.
Yeah, let me see.
I'm looking at this thing. This is one of the most ugliest phones I've ever seen.
Yeah, and listen, this is a prototype
model,
obviously.
Look at how heavy that looks like it would be.
It's kind of falling apart in this picture, but
it's got that giant camera on there. It's not appealing visually whatsoever.
What is this?
I don't know. Apparently, it's very easy to replace the screen. I mean, I think that's kind of neat, but I think overall, it's a very odd looking device.
Yeah. Look at that. Look at all those modules.
It's not visually appealing. If they can make this visually appealing, maybe, but you almost, what you need to do is have some sort of case to go around the entire thing to hide that all the little freaking modules.
Yeah, and listen, this is still very early, but the concept is cool. Like, I like the fact that I could change out the camera. You could add, you know, who cares about the CPU and stuff. But I do think this is going to be an approach that eventually is adapted into regular phones where, you know, I could swap out the camera lens. And they have this entire accessory list of cameras. They have entire crazy accessories, you know, that they're selling more and more of. I do think that's pretty cool.
They could also still face the big hurdle of carriers. Because as we saw when Google came out with Android and their own smartphones, that, well, carriers didn't give a crap about them.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think it's going to become a thing. I really don't. I can't imagine it becoming a thing, but it's an interesting concept that I would love to play around with. Now, would I use it as my daily driver? I don't know.
Probably not.
Probably not. I don't know. What else do we have, John?
Amazon is also reportedly to have a new smartphone that they're coming out with. We've been hearing rumors about this for quite a while now. But Board Genius Report actually has some solid details now, including leaked pictures of the device. Of course, it's wrapped in a prototype case, so it doesn't look visually appealing or anything like that. But apparently it has, I think it said, 5 or 6 cameras on this thing.
Yeah, so apparently it's going to have a camera in every corner, and those cameras are going to track your eye movement and your head movement, and it's going to be able to kind of determine what you're looking at.
It's supposed to have some sort of like 3D interface.
I don't care for the 3D stuff. I don't.
It says it's got the normal camera on the front, a normal camera on the back, and then 4 cameras on the front to track all that stuff in the 3D.
Yeah, yeah, 13. It's going to be 13 megapixels.
Screen size of 4.7 inches, and a 2 gigabytes of RAM and an unnamed Qualcomm Snapdragon processor.
Yeah, so they're probably, it's going to be, and they have 2 models, right, from what I read. They're going to have an entry model and then something with like a lot of features and a lot of stuff. You know, the bigger question is, does the market need another device? Probably not, but can they be a game changer? It depends if they do something crazy, like let's say they do $199 unsubsidized. You just buy it through them.
I don't think that's enough of a deal for people to really take notice, because we've seen those types of deals in the past where Google has offered their Android smartphone for significantly less money, unsubsidized and all that stuff. And
yeah, but Google doesn't have the ability that Amazon has, because remember, everybody's going to Amazon. You slap that thing on the front page of Amazon, now it's there, $199. You go to the carrier.
But you still have people wanting an interface. You can still sell a $200 Android tablet, and because the interface is crappy, nobody wants it.
Yeah. Well, the interface may be good.
That's one of the reasons why the iPhone did take off when it came out in 2007. It was a revolutionary device in terms of interface and the way you used it. Until people actually do that, I don't think there's any way that something new is going to come along and do something different. I love the fact that they're trying something here. I think that's cool. But I just think that they're trying to do this whole virtualization type of stuff. That's the key word this year is virtualization and virtual reality. I think, to be honest, I think this whole virtual reality stuff is just such a novelty at this point that it's ridiculous that people are trying to push it as much as they are. It's way overhyped. I'm more interested in terms of interface. My proof to that is Windows Phone. Yes, Windows Phone has been out for, you know, 2-3 years now, but it's really one of those interfaces that has really matured over time,
and
people are looking at this now and saying, you know what? This is actually kind of nice. This might actually be better than the Android phone that I'm using now. And it might be on par with the iPhone, but you're still always going to have those people that say iPhone is better than Windows Phone or whatever, and vice versa.
Now, listen, Apple's ecosystem is crazy big. And that's what makes it very appealing.
But when the iPhone came out, it was such a small market for them.
I mean, it didn't exist.
They were only on AT&T. They really didn't have any applications. They didn't have every single feature that other phones had, but they had an interface that people loved to use.
Yeah, and it was so different, and it worked. I mean, I'm curious to see the rest of their interface. We've gotten a couple screenshots. You know, we got the start screen, you know, whatever the lock screen is on this thing.
That's going to be your main selling point. It's not necessarily hardware. It's not necessarily how many cameras you have it in. And I don't even think it's all about 3D or virtual reality stuff. I think it's the way that you use the device is what's going to sell it.
Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, they may be able to do something here because they have their Amazon marketplace. They have the cloud interface. They have a lot of Amazon stuff. But listen, if the camera's unbelievable on this thing, that may be enough for a lot of people. I keep bringing up the camera because that's what a lot of people... That is the function that almost everybody uses on the phone is the camera.
Yeah.
And that may be enough. I mean, Windows Phone is enough for... the Nokia phones are enough for me to go and buy a Nokia phone. Because of the camera. That's a big selling point for me. So if they're offering something that the other ones really are not or not doing so well, that may be enough. But it's exciting to see it. I mean, and to be honest,
I'm glad they're trying to do something.
They're using Android the way that it should be used. This Google experience is fine, but almost every one of these manufacturers are doing something really shitty with the experience. Excuse me for cursing, but it's essentially the same thing. And they'll do like the way that you swipe will be different, or the apps menu will be a little different. But essentially,
they'll
just
have a different icon.
It's a row of icons. That's all it is. Row of icons and widgets. Amazon is at least using it in a different way, where they're saying, "Listen, we're not going to give you this Google experience. We're going to give you the Amazon, the Kindle experience, or whatever they're going to call it. We're giving our own UI to this experience. Thing. We're just using the source." We're not going to use it as far, you know, like everybody else. I think that's a big selling point. I would love to see every one of the other manufacturers start doing this because then there's something distinctly different that you're offering.
But here's the problem is that I think Amazon's execution is always somewhat behind and somewhat limited in what they're doing. And in these days, you really have to come out swinging. And I think a good reason for that is what we've seen with the Fire TV. Initially, it had a lot of hype and it looked great, but now there's a lot of caveats that we're seeing with this that, you know, voice doesn't work quite with everything. Certain features don't work with everything. And like you can't search, you can search right away from the home screen with Amazon, but you can only search Amazon. If you want to search in Netflix, you still have to go to the Netflix app. Whereas with Roku, you can search all of those applications from one interface.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those areas where if they're going to come out, this is the user experience and the interface where you have to nail it. And I don't think Amazon has nailed it in any way whatsoever in any of the products that they've launched. The Kindle Fire, I think that was a great example of not quite nailing it. I mean, it was a great idea. It just concept, it was great, but in execution, it wasn't quite all there.
Sure, yeah. I'm on board Genius Report. I'm looking at all these leaked Apple images. Leaked iPad Air, next gen. It's the same exact thing as the previous gen.
Is it leaked, or is it just a mock-up that somebody made and said, oh,
no,
here's a new...
It's actually, it's a possible leak. It's a guy holding the possible casing.
That somebody 3D printed.
Like,
I'm looking
on this website here, right? They're saying the Galaxy S5 versus the HTC One M8. You know, which one is better? They're essentially offering you the same exact thing.
I know.
They're both exactly the same in every possible way. Maybe one has a better camera than the other one, but essentially the UI is identical. You got a couple of widgets here that are a little different, but it's the same exact phone. I don't know if that's going to be the driving force behind this.
But I think that's also part of the detriment to Android is the fact that we have such a fragmented way of using Android. It's all called Android, but it's all modified so much that it's not exactly the same or consistent across devices.
Yeah.
Whereas with iOS, It's very consistent between the iPod Touch, an iPhone, and an iPad.
Yeah, by the
way.
All
their iOS devices are very consistent.
Yeah, yeah. All right, going to another story, John, and then we'll do our picks of the week.
Do you want a serious story, or do you want just a fun story?
Whatever you want to do.
I'm really excited the fact that NASA has announced that they've found another Earth-like planet. I think this is really cool, and this is the most Earth-like planet that they found yet, and it's only 500 light years away. They said it's very similar in size.
Strap on that rocket, John. We're headed.
We'll be dead by the time we get there. But it's very cool the fact that they, if you actually look at the artist rendering from some pictures that NASA had, it looks very Earth-like. They said that it's got like a very similar. I'm trying to think of it's very similar to Earth.
Yeah, I mean, basically. It's sitting in a habitable. I can't say it today.
Habitable
zone. It's at the edge of it, and
they think it's not too hot. Or
yeah,
it's not too cold.
Their sun is a red dwarf, and it's a little different than ours, obviously. But it's about 10%. The sun, the Earth like planet is about 10% bigger than our Earth. It takes 130 days to orbit. We don't know if it has water. We don't know anything about the actual, you know, makeup of this planet. We have detected with Kepler that it's sitting in a zone that could be discovered or could possibly have life. Which is, I mean, it's unbelievable that we're discovering these all the time. What's fascinating is that a lot of the stories I picked it up said this is the first time NASA has discovered an Earth-like planet. And I go, no, that's not the first time. They've announced Earth-like planets hundreds of times over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It is amazing that we're discovering much more now.
It's the closest one in terms of size comparison to Earth.
Yeah. I mean, even
every other planet that we found that is Earth-like is either much larger or much smaller.
I'm trying to think on, like, when we were younger, John, would they make those announcements? I think this is something over the last, like, 15 years that we've started to.
They've made these announcements before.
Like, 30 years ago, I don't remember NASA, like, saying, you know, like, if you go back, like.
They didn't have the PR like we do have now where, you know, they send out a press release and all these tech websites pick it up.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. I think it's really cool.
Whereas
I love this stuff.
Before, 30 years ago, what you would have seen is you might have seen it maybe on some network news in a 30-second story or buried somewhere in a newspaper.
Well, 30 years ago, we were still going to the moon, and we don't do that anymore. So NASA's able to see these things, but we're not going anywhere. I think this is really cool. The Kepler, when they launched Kepler, it's very advanced. They're actually launching another one that's going to be able to detect if the planet has any kind of gas or water. Which I think they're saying like in the next like 10 years they're going to be able to launch this thing and it's going to have much stronger.
They say a lot of things though.
Yeah, I mean a lot goes into it than just like a telescope on this thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's going based on a lot of stuff. So it's really cool. I love this, you know, this kind of.
I think it would be fascinating if it turned out to be like some sort of parallel world where we all exist there, but it's like very different because of the 130-day. Revolution cycle that they have there, but it's just like another parallel world. Like, yes, parallel worlds exist, and it's only 500 light years away.
Yeah, can you imagine what Suncast in that world is like? I don't want to meet him.
He might be successful.
He might be very
married.
Yeah, but you know, I think you'd be like 100 there because it's only 130 days.
Yeah,
so you're like 150-year-old, 30-year-old. It's great. I'm curious. I want to meet my evil version. Can you imagine?
Well,
he'll be really nice.
And ugly.
Fat and ugly. That's what I'm hoping.
And you're actually a magician.
And I'm actually a magician. That would be perfect. I would love that. All right, John, time for picks of the week. That Andrew might be sober. Absolutely right, Swamp Rat. he may be really sober and bald. He's the anti-me. This is a portion of the show where we talk about anything that we like that week. Last week, we did not do picks of the week because mine sucked. But this week, I'm going to go first, John. What do you think?
Go for it.
So my pick this week, I've become a cord cutter, or I'm becoming a cord cutter. I hate cable. I hate paying for cable. I don't watch anything on cable anymore, except for wrestling on Mondays. Everything else, I'm paying like $300 a month because we have a cable box in every freaking room in this house. And nobody watches cable. So I'm slowly entering the world of cord cutting. I have Netflix, I have an Apple TV, I have a Roku, and I've noticed that even the shows that I would watch, I'm watching it on Apple TV. I'm not watching it on my cable box, or I'm watching it on Roku. So I got an antenna the other day. I have one in one of the rooms, and it wasn't that great, but I got this antenna. I got the Mini Flatwave by Wineguard. Yeah, Wineguard. It's the Mini Flatwave indoor HD antenna. And it's designed for metro area, so it's able to kind of break through whatever static you could get. So I set this up, tied it up so I can show you guys. But it's very simple. Look how thin this thing is. You see that?
Wow.
Look how thin that is. So the trick with these antennas...
It's like a mouse pad.
It really is. The trick with these antennas is that you should be by a window. The best placement would be by a window or have a room facing the outside. You know, if it's like a center... if it's like in the center of the house, it's going to be difficult to kind of get that unless you have an outdoor antenna. But I set this up and I was able to get really good reception right in my living room because it's right by a window. So I ran the cable and it was right by the window. And I was really surprised because I have another one in my bedroom and I can't get anything. It's really crappy. So I was very surprised. Now, the company does make amplified versions also. So I haven't tried that one, but this one, I was very surprised on how well it worked. And, you know, if you need your local channels, that's the best way to do it because it's free, the local channels. It's called the Mini Flatwave Indoor HD Antenna. I know John is getting into cord cutting, so this might be something for you.
Yeah, maybe.
You don't.
Now, is the quality good?
Yes. I was very surprised by it. I was very, because it's not amplified.
Right.
You know, a lot of times people freak out when it's not amplified that you're not going to get it. But I was able to get great reception. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be your results because depending on where you live. But it's really, really, really surprising how well this thing works. And, you know,
that's cool.
You're getting your local news. You're getting the local channels. And it's an HD. And you know what? The HD that you get on local via an antenna is better than what I'm getting from the cable company, which is sick if you think about that.
Huh. That's sad.
Yeah. Over the air, I'm getting better HD than I am with the cable company because it's uncompressed. Yeah. And that's my pick of the week. The Flatwave Mini Razor Thin Indoor Antenna. They have it on Amazon for $22, actually. That's really
cheap.
That's
not expensive either.
No.
I mean, that's really cheap.
Yeah, that's actually really good. John, what's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is a service called Push Bullet. It's an application for your phone, your computer, whatever device you have. It's a way to send information between your devices. And this is something that I've been needing for quite a while now because a lot of times I'll have... links or something or a picture that I want to send from my computer to my phone, and this makes it very easy to do that. You can just log in with your Google account or whatever account that you want and easily send your notes, links, list, and all sorts of stuff. It's really cool. You can even send directions and pictures. If you have an attachment, you can send an attachment right to your phone.
So what's cool is that if your phone is ringing, it'll tell you on your computer.
Yeah.
Which
you can do that as well. I don't have that set up, though. That might be only an Android feature.
Yeah, then maybe. I see he's using an Android phone for that.
They have applications for your computer, for your browser, for your phone, for Windows, for Mac. They have an application for basically everything. So if you want an easy way to send stuff from your computer to your phone, this is a great way to do it. And you can also set this up for other services as well for push notifications. I have this set up with some of my other services and even Ift or Zapier. If you have one of those services that you use, you could also set it up with Push Bullet so that when an action takes place, you get a notification on your phone that something's happened. which is what I really like it for, is that I have it set up with one of my services that notifies me every time something happens.
Yeah. I like this. This is pretty cool.
And it's free. And all you have to do is go to pushbullet.com and sign up. You can log in with your Google account if you'd like to.
Very, very cool. Very cool. John, good pick. We both had good picks this week.
I'm telling you, I really like this because there's so many times where I see a link that I want to put on my phone or check out on my phone, and all I have to do is go to this website or even use the browser extension and go to Pushbullet and push this page to my iPhone, and it does it. It's so simple.
That is really cool. If you want to follow John on Twitter, it's at Suncast. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarian. Of course, you can follow the GFQ Network at GFQ Network on Twitter.
If you guys are a fan of What the Tech, we have a Patreon campaign.
Oh, yeah, tell them. Tell them about the campaign.
So we're doing this campaign on Patreon. We got a couple of levels there where if you sign up for if we reach certain goals, we're going to offer you more content or certain features that we don't offer now. So with your help, we can add more features to What the Tech. I know a lot of people that watch Tech News Weekly are also What the Tech fans. So this is great for you guys. You can support us for as little as $1 per episode, or you could even do something crazy cool like $20 per episode.
Yes.
And it'll help us out so much.
There's a guy that's doing $50 an episode.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. In a good
way. But we have these certain goals. So once we reach these goals, we're looking at offering like bonus shows and even ad-free streams for viewers.
Yeah, we want to have an ad-free live stream. We also, if we reach, I think, $5,000 per episode, we're going to kill ads totally. There's going to be no more ads on shows.
You and Paul are going to move in together.
And that is for $10,000. Paul and I are filming a reality show where we live together. We share a bed. I make him breakfast. It's a whole thing we're going to be doing. whole thing. We're going to go on the road.
I kind of want to see that.
Paul and I play basketball. We're going to do a lot of stuff.
Two tech enthusiasts living together.
Yes.
Will they be able to get along? And what sort of technical fights will they get into?
Yeah. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write a book for X amount about my life. So we're gonna have a lot of features. So if you're a fan, if you don't care about the extra, you know, getting a bonus content or whatever, you could even do less. I know some people, they don't really care for the bonus. I like they're doing like 50 cents a show, which we welcome all any kind of money that you guys want to spend and send to us. We welcome it because it helps us every bit of the way. Another thing that really helps us is you guys using our Amazon affiliate link. That is a humongous help for us. We do a lot of our purchases through Amazon, and a lot of the upgrades that we have done to the studio over the last year have been because you guys are using our Amazon affiliate link. You're buying stuff. We're getting a tiny little portion. I think we get like 7% of every sale. If it's a tech item, we get like 4%. But every bit counts, and it's a huge, huge help when you guys do that. You could do that by going to gfq.co/Amazon, or if you're on our website right now, I actually would rather you guys click on the link on our website. We have an Amazon banner on the top. You could click on that Amazon banner. If you have a pop-up blocker, you're not going to see it. But if you're not using a pop-up blocker, click on that. And whenever you buy something, and you know what? Bookmark it. Whenever you buy something on Amazon, absolutely, I'll still get the credit. You don't have to buy it that minute. You could just use that link and buy stuff. And I appreciate you guys using that. It's a big help. Subscribe to us also.
By the way,
the
Patreon URL, if people are looking for that, it's Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech.
Yes, patreon.com/whatthetech is a link. Or you could even search it on Patreon. You could search the link.
Yeah.
What else do we have? Yeah, subscribe. Thank you, John. You can subscribe to us by on Android, if any of the Android apps, you could do it on. We're on iTunes. We're everywhere podcasts are available. Subscribe to us. It's a big help. We are able to go to our advertising and say, look how many people are subscribing. Look how many people are downloading. Even if you watch live, subscribe. I mean, you could delete it if you don't want to listen. You could just delete it. Just keep downloading the show over and over again. Yeah. What happened, John? You screwed up?
Nothing. I screwed you up.
Wow, you did.
Stuff.
You did. You messed me up. That's it, guys. We'll see y'all next week. Good night, everybody.